If you want to line up at the microphone, then we'll have time for questions, and I'd ask that everybody keep their questions brief. Thank you.
Hi, I'm actually the oldest of 10 homeschooled children, and very happy to have had such a wonderful educational experience. And I was wondering what the, we hear a lot of horror stories over here about Europe, and what you believe is the general state of homeschooling in Europe, and do you expect it to get better or worse?
Well, it's different. I mean, Sweden is an exception together with Germany. Homeschooling is generally allowed in Europe. It's generally allowed in the Nordic country, with the exception of Germany and today Sweden. So it's not a combined picture. Of course, many countries are worried about Sweden tends to be a leader. Now, Sweden forbids homeschooling. Maybe others will too. But, you know, we will have to see. We will have to hope. And we're getting good support from North America on this.
You mentioned that the daycare quality is dropping dramatically in Sweden, yet the government is very focused on it. Why is the quality dropping? Is it financially just economically impossible to sustain, or is there some other reasons?
It's because it's costing too much, and because daycare is now under the control of local governments, and there are no rules on how to do it. You know, we've got rules for how many pigs you have in a certain month. We don't have rules for how many children we have, and it's because of local political reasons. It's becoming too expenses. Can we save something here? This is basically the reason, yes.
Hi. This is very thought-provoking, and I agree with much that you said, but it did strike me, you know, the Canadian figures on adolescent mental health are very poor, even poorer. I mean, the rate is worse than Sweden, so from the OECD reports. And yet we do not have the same family policy in Canada and childcare. So I'm wondering what other factors you think. I think, you know, family life has changed dramatically, and the role of family in building those strong relationships is changing, and the pressure for families to work in order to pay for the next generation's pensions or their parents' pensions. There are many factors, but I don't think childcare is in itself the driving factor.
I don't know about, you know, the Canadian figures. I know about the European ones. But what you have to see here that there are many factors that could attribute a lower mental health in children. And many of them we have not got, because we have not got child poverty. We've got wealthy children. We've got wealthy families. We've got an excellent social system. Those typical factors that you may find more in North America, we do not have. So you can kind of, in Sweden, rule out the factors about being socially marginalized, or having too little money, or, you know, not getting a job, not being supported. They're out. What's left? And I know, I don't know exactly in Canada, but I know in North America, that's different from Sweden. You know, you've got bigger differences. You've got other reasons probably for mental health problems. And, you know, at least in the United States, there's quite some daycare going on too of various qualities. And again, the experience of living in Sweden and meeting people and following the debate gives you quite convinced of these figures. I mean, they show another reality.
I wonder about what the impact on your statistics might be of widespread immigration from Muslim countries, and whether there's any difference between what's happening in the cities that have become sort of Muslim enclaves like Malmo and the outcomes for their families versus Swedish families.
Well, I'm not familiar with exactly the figures here, but what I've read about is basically that many of the immigrants have various social problems and they're traumatized from their countries, which is going to lead to bigger problems, but it's not like they in themselves seem to create more problems. In some sense, the immigrants are more able to start their own businesses and get on with things once they have the possibility to do so. And I mean, the mental health problem figures, which is up to 30%, shows that this is something which goes way beyond immigration.
You mentioned that on many indicators, the health of young people has declined, but that they're not necessarily diagnosable. They just do not perform at their best potential. Do you know if there's any evidence already compiled in terms of diagnosable entities, conditions, psychiatric or medical?
Yes, there are. And they have increased. You will see that the number of places in Swedish psychiatric wards have decreased for adults but increased for young people. So these are very small numbers, but they have increased. We have there's a lot of the prescription of psychotherapeutic drugs for young people has increased. It is quite high. The rates of depression have increased. So you will see that also on the more serious end, although that's not regarded as a big problem because still the numbers are relatively small. The really big shift you see is in these mild, more mild psychological disorders.
Hi, quick question. I'm on board with what you're saying, but when you defend it to detractors from an evidence-based perspective, what's the next closest control country to Sweden? Like, is it in Scandinavia in terms of percentages daycare, you know? Because you're saying to the previous question that you can control for perhaps there are less single families, less broken families, less poverty, but so on a control country to country, who's second?
Well, I would guess that you would look like a country like Denmark or Norway. But again, when you look at these countries, you see, this is a complex issue, you realize. This is very hard to actually study. And I'm not sure anybody's ever going to be able to prove something. Already, when you look at the research on daycare that's been done in the United States, the NIHCHD, where they've really tried to isolate all factors, they still say, this is difficult. We don't have control groups in the same way, you know. Who has chosen what? And I think you have to weigh in that you have a daycare system in a country with Swedish family culture. And Swedish family culture that you go down from hundreds of years is different in Sweden than it is, for instance, in Finland and in Norway. Now, if that means that Finland has never accepted the kind of policies we have in Sweden, or is that the way around, it's of course very difficult to prove. So it's difficult to do a comparison. And what I usually suggest here is like, you turn it all around. You show, this is the country we're having. How would you solve this problem? And what most psychologists would say is, well, obviously your children needs more parental care. So you could turn it around, that for whatever reason, this is not working, at least not in Sweden. And turning it around, you can see that, well, obviously these children need more parental care. That's definitely, that would be my answer.
I'm not sure if they're your style of government in Sweden, but I'm wondering when people are aware of those statistics that 7 out of 10 women would prefer to stay at home with their children at a young age. I would think in a democratic country that you would have people that would use that as a platform to promote change in your nation. And is that happening?
There's one party, 5% of the votes, who claim that. All the others say basically the message is that women are not really aware of and they could get stuck at home. We've got we call it the women's trap, it's called in Sweden. They could get stuck at home, and actually women don't understand that, so it's much better for the government to encourage them to work instead. So it would take a lot of questioning, and you would have to understand the Swedish political system. Two historians called an analysis the Swedish political system. They say basically Sweden is a parliamentarian dictatorship because we've got so little constitution that a government can pretty much do whatever they want once they're elected. So if they don't think that this is a huge big question, they will ignore it. And they will go for something else.
And so just to build on that, have you had any success with media in regards to helping to promote some of these statistics so that people could respond to from across Sweden, and maybe that would bring a greater awareness of the frustration?
These figures come out in the media every now and then, and you know, there will be one article one day, there will be some comments on the net, and nobody from political will comment it, or they will say, yes, we're concerned, but that it will stop at that. It will stop at that. It has not gotten up to becoming in the top agenda of politics, unfortunately, yet.
Hi, I was just wondering how you managed to homeschool if it's illegal.
Well, basically, you have to be prepared to leave the country within immediately. You don't have to go far. You can just go to an island in the Baltic Sea, which is Finnish, and you're safe. In the board of the Swedish Association for Homeschooling, basically, in the last 6 months, two people there of the five-person board have emigrated to Finland. So it's scary. It's very scary. For myself, I do believe that I'm a verbal enough a person to kind of ward off things, but you know, it's uncomfortable. It's definitely uncomfortable. And the way you do it actually is you apply for permission, which you have to do, and you get turned down. This is the beginning of the school year. You apply for one school year at a time. You get turned down. Then you appeal to the next higher court. And while doing this, you will get a notice saying your child has to come to school, and you respond, well, we're appealing a decision. We're in a disagreement about the law here. Okay, so something goes, you get turned down by the first, we won actually once, but you get turned down by the lower court. Then you appeal to a higher court. Now I start getting a letter saying that, you know, you might get a fine or we might put the social authorities on you if you don't comply to this. And you respond back to saying, well, this matter is not settled yet. We interpret the law differently than you do, and until a final verdict has been done, we will continue homeschooling. Then you get turned down there, then you apply to the next, to the highest court, and by the time you get to the highest court, the school year is over. You start all over again. Now, they don't like this, of course, and they see this pattern. So, you know, a few of us, I mean, we've managed 2.5 years now, but a few of them doing this, you know, get scary. And there are some families now who got very high fines, which will also push through the legal system. So far, no one has paid a krona yet. And there is actually a little break. Myself and another family in my town have gotten a break. Our case will be taken up at the mid-court now. So we have some hope that they may actually look at the European Convention of Human Rights, which is a Swedish law, and it's actually a Swedish quasi-constitution, and they might look there and see it's impossible to forbid home education when it's done in a qualified way. So there are some hopes there.
I wanted to continue with the question of the gentleman who preceded me about how to make or effect change if you are saying that there is no will to discuss the issue. And the statistic that stayed with me is the idea that, especially among women, early retirement and sick leave is increasing. And I was wondering, more than talking about government, what effect is that having on companies, on businesses, and how that, you know, when you're thinking that people who could be at their most productive years with years of experience, and all of a sudden these people drop out of the workforce, aren't businesses complaining, and perhaps use that as a way to try to change things around?
A business, has, I don't think, have that awareness, unfortunately. It is a problem, and this means that this present center-right government has put a lot of pressure on getting people on sick leave back to work. And it's got these extreme consequences where people who have cancer and very serious illnesses are being forced to go to work if they're going to get any kind of benefits. So it's like you're trying to solve the problem by pushing people back to work rather than realizing that it's a hidden social problem behind
it. Yeah. We'll just take these last two questions. Thank you.
To what extent is the problem in Sweden with this situation, with daycare, fueled by women who are of the feminist ideology trying to impose that on other women?
To nearly 100%. We have an extremely strong feminist movement in Sweden who gets funded by the government, who gets special professors at the university. It's extremely strong, and the fact is that this is a relatively small group of the women who are extreme feminists. If I go out and give a lecture on something similar topic, maybe not as provocative as this one, so in a group of 100 people there will maybe be one or two feminists. So most Swedish women do not want it, but our feminists totally dominate the debate, yes.
My question actually goes along with that. You said at the beginning that there's this incredible equality between the genders, with 50% parliament, which is fantastic, I think. But it seems like women aren't actually respected. So how do you have equality if what they want isn't respected, and where they're allowed to work or encouraged to work isn't equal?
Well, that is the challenge also of Swedish inequality. Women are respected when they work. I mean, to put it bluntly, women are respected when they behave as men. But when women want to do the things that are unique to being a woman, like caring for small children, then they are not respected at all. This is something we're trying to discuss and debate in Sweden, but you know, that's just a glitch in the argument that never really gets put forth. We're trying to put that forth, that you know, real respect for women means respecting if they want to take care of their children or if they want to work, and honoring both is important. And we're not getting in the way with there, because the feminists are saying, basically, and they dominate the debate, that women do not really want to take care of children. They will get stuck at home, and they will not get good pensions, you know. They will not get pensions, they will say. And we will say, you know, well, that's easy. Parliament can decide to give them a pension. No, we can't do that. You know, we can't encourage something to go against the work policy. No, we have to follow the work policy. So it's a very stuck discussion, and these thoughts are just simply not being allowed to emerge with any power in the debate.
So I'd just like to take a moment to thank Jonas, and I really feel very strongly that I should thank you not only for coming all the way to Ottawa to present, but to thank you for what you're doing in Sweden. As I heard you describe the legal battle you face to homeschool your children, thank you for coming here, and thank you for your work in Sweden. Please join me in thanking Jonas.